and welcome to another awesome episode of the Foodie Flashback, the podcast where we talk about food, food-related memories, and just everything that goes with that. My guest today, and this is a first, it's the first kind of, how do I call that? Like, it's the first, like, partner of someone who's been on the show? I think that's a good description of it. I have Teresa with me, and she is, I don't want to give away what we're going to talk about, but if you remember, I think it was episode 5 or 6, I think 5, I had Tom Ferry on, and he said, I have to talk to Teresa because she's the foodie in the family. Welcome, Teresa. How are you doing?
Thank you. I'm doing well. Thank you for having me as a guest.
I'm always looking forward to talking to as many different people as possible. And I understand this is probably also your first ever podcast that you've been on.
Yes, that's right.
So this is like a world premiere, like Foodie Flashback with Theresa. That's awesome. Tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, like where you're from, what you do.
So I'm originally from Minnesota, but I live in California and consider myself very settled here, been here since the late 70s. I am a baby and low-end age sleep consultant. I work with children and babies and their parents to change sleep behaviors and also other behaviors. Been doing that in some form for about 30 years. And that's basically what I do. I cook a lot. I enjoy cooking a lot. And I'm an avid environmentalist also. Nice. So there's more than just work.
That's a lot. I mean, you cook all the food that Tom, according to himself, doesn't care about, but still likes to eat.
I cook every meal because, God love him, he can't cook.
Yeah,
he can make rice. He can do rice and pasta better than I do, although nice. I've gotten better at those now. Yeah. So, but vegetables we cook to death. He's not a cook.
that's funny. But he can probably make really good chocolate puddings or something like that, right?
No. He doesn't cook at all. he does cereal. He makes really good coffee.
That's important too.
Like, it is important. I'm really grateful for that. I don't drink it very often, so when I do have a little bit, it's nice when it's good. But no, he can't cook. When he was a bachelor, of course, he did some cooking for himself. He steamed vegetables and rice and made sandwiches. But he would grill every once in a while. He does grill a bit, but even that, I'm sort of hovering over it a bit because I don't want everything overcooked.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's not his forte.
No, but it is yours, and this is why we're talking.
Exactly.
At the beginning, I always ask two important questions, and I'm looking forward to your answers. So what is your definition of a foodie, and do you consider yourself one?
So I'm going to start with, do I consider myself one, and say absolutely 100%. I am a foodie. I'm proud of it, and I don't have a choice, actually. It's just sort of who I am, and it's about my, you know, whether it's DNA or what, it's what makes me happy is food. And food in all forms. So I'm not a gardener, but I've started to do some gardening. But the forms of looking at it, appreciating it, admiring what we get from food. And and then cooking it, trying to bring out the best in food. Those are sort of the ways I look at food. As far as the definition, for me personally, the definition is I pretty much think about food all of the time. So not for eating it, but thinking about, ooh, what am I going to make next? Okay, what do I need to do in order to make that next thing? Like right now I have a lot of chicken bones in the fridge that I'm going to be making a bone broth from. Nice. Then that bone broth is going to turn into some soup, whatever mm-hmm. inspires me, whatever vegetables. And this week it's a lot of leafy vegetables. So I have kale and beet greens mm-hmm. and all those things that need to be used. So I thought, oh, I'll make a pureed soup. Mm-hmm. Do you know it's not going to be the husband's favorite soup that I ever make, but that's what I'm making because mm-hmm. that's what's inspired me at the farmer's market. So I think for me, it's that I live, breathe, and think food mm-hmm. pretty much all the time.
And it sounds also like you're it's not just about preparing food, but also where you get it from. Like you said, you go to the farmer's market and you look at what's available and that inspires right. you to do it. So it's like it goes beyond the meal and the preparation for it, or like the cooking of the meal. It's like it's everything around it. Like, where do I get the things from? How it was grown? Probably all of that. I mean, you said you're an environmentalist as well. So I'm guessing that mm-hmm. that influences a little bit also what you buy or what you cook, right?
Yes. And I will say, you know, I have the gift of living in California and I have mm-hmm. moved other places in the country. I spent some time in Connecticut, Kansas. Where else did I live? Couple other places. And for me, well, in Minnesota, for me, I end up back in California and really appreciating that we grow the majority of the food in the United States. I mean, this state produces most of the food. Mm-hmm. And so I really appreciate being able to go to the farmer's market in the winter and choose the vegetables. Even, you know, may not be exciting. It might be broccoli, it might be kale, might be cauliflower right now, but it's fresh and it's vibrant mm-hmm. and it's organic, which is a huge part of what I try to do too. I try to support organic farming all the time. And I get to meet the farmers mm-hmm. for the most part, or their employees, you know. So it's an adventure. Some people go to church on Sunday, I go to the farmer's market.
Yeah, I do that too.
Yeah. It's a crucial part of mm-hmm. my week. You know, it helps set the mood for the week as well.
But so. Speak for yourself about broccoli being boring. Like I think well, broccoli is very, very interesting.
Could it do is, so much but after it. Month three, you know, okay. that's what you have, only the cruciferous vegetables. It's like, okay, you know, I'm ready for my green beans to start mm-hmm. coming back in, or the sugar snap peas, or, you know, something like that. But no, we eat broccoli all the time and like it, so yeah, it's good.
Broccoli is probably something that universally in my family everybody eats. Like there are not too many things, like everybody's a little bit picky, but broccoli mm-hmm. is one of the things I can always make and someone will eat it.
That's good, because a lot of children won't eat yeah. broccoli. They don't like it, so I tell parents, use the stems mm-hmm. use the tender part of the stems, don't give them the tops, chop it up, you know, let them eat it that way. And usually that works, because it's usually the texture of the top of it they don't like. But yeah and the stems are tender.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I always use the stems with the tops, because like, why not? Mm-hmm. Like why throw something away? It's so good.
If it's edible, eat
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Yeah, it's true.
I mean, you know, if it's good for you. And broccoli's really good for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you should.
I've even started... Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I've even started using more of the bottom of the cauliflower. Mm-hmm. So, because it's like, you know, I don't think I have to cut it so close to the floret. I can leave a little bit of a tail on that too. Mm-hmm. So I'm using more of that all the time now too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's always good. And I mean, whatever you cut off, you can always, like, as you said, like make a broth out of it.
Yes. Yes.
Something we're probably going to get to. I usually like to start at the beginning somewhere. Like, what are your earliest food-related memories, like, early in your life?
Right. So my mom was a farmer's market fan also. So we did go to the farmer's market. I remember going specifically around apple season, which, mm-hmm. you know, fall, and we would get apples, we'd get maple syrup, fresh that year, maple syrup, honey, and mm-hmm. those. So sort of stocking up for the winter, we would do the farmer's market on a regular basis. That, and my mom was a single mom most of the time, mm-hmm. and so she worked a lot. So one of my more vivid memories is when I started to cook more and make food for the family. And I remember making a vegetable soup and using, I know this is going to sound probably ridiculous, but we used to get these, they were like called German hot dogs and they were kind of spicy. And I chop those up and put them in the soup to give it a little bit of flavor. And so that, I also had a neighbor who cooked, liked to bake and cook a lot of things. And she was Russian and she was like a grandmother to us. And she would share her produce with us. And when her mulberry tree was in, we would season, you know, and it was producing mulberries. We'd go over there and sit and eat the mulberries. We'd pull her, rhubarb out of, with permission, we'd pull the rhubarb out of the ground and sit with some sugar and just dip and eat rhubarb outside. And she made this banana bread. She was a really gruff woman. She'd go, "Hey kid, come here." And then it'd be like, "Uh-oh." And then you'd go over and she'd go, "Here, try this." And she'd shove something at you to eat. But her banana bread was always the thing. It was like, okay, no problem. I'll have the banana bread. So she'd always feed us. You know, if she'd bake, she'd always go, "Come here." And then she'd give these hugs where she'd put her arm around your neck and just kind of squeeze you, you know, just as gruff. But she made these, like I said, beautiful banana bread. And she'd always put a lace doily over the top of the banana bread, sprinkle powdered sugar, lift the lace doily. So there'd be this beautiful doily pattern. And this is a woman who was like, "Hey kid, come here," you know, like a wrestler. So that's one of my favorite young memories about food.
That's kind of like the typical like stereotype of a Russian grandma, I would say. Like a little bit rough, but still very nice. Like,
yeah, it probably is kind of stereotypical of that. But yeah, but just darling, real, like, she's just the greatest person ever. Rose was her name.
How old were you? Like, you said you were cooking for your family. How old were you?
12.
Okay.
I made that soup for the first time at 12. We did baking in our family, some baking here and there. My mother was an incredible pie maker. She made the most amazing lemon meringue pie. I know you had a guest on who was talking about lemon meringue pie not too long ago. It was the mom. Yeah, that the doorbell kept ringing. her husband was testing it or something during the show. But anyway, she was saying how hard it was to make a lemon meringue pie, and my mom just would nail it. She was kind of famous for those pies. And so that, and put her potato salad, you know, sounds very, you know, American, very kind of middle America. But it was delicious.
Did you bake or cook with your mom before, like before starting to cook on your own?
Not as much. My sister and I would do some things together, but my mom was sort of busy. I mean, she worked 2 and 3 jobs at all times. So when she was in the kitchen, it was usually out, out, out. I need to get this done. Right. And so I'd be like, okay, you know, so we did the dishes. That was our job when it came to food, eating and doing the dishes. But I would watch her a lot. And we did some holiday baking here and there. And she would have us. One thing she always did, I just remembered actually, when she would roll out the crust for pies, there'd be leftover crust. And then she'd roll that out, allow us to roll it out, put cinnamon and sugar on it, and then she'd slice it into strips and bake it. And so we'd have like this little crust cinnamon and sugar cookie kind of thing that she'd make from the leftover crust. Yeah, so that it was that great. Sort of thing. She'd let it, it was delicious. I still do it sometimes.
That's actually so a good
she'd
idea.
Let us do that. It's a great idea. Yeah. And it does let your littlest hands participate, and it goes beyond just making cookies, right? It's like you can incorporate it into sort of your regular baking if pie baking is a regular baking event. So she was more out, it's I'm cooking.
You mentioned a sister. Is that like an older sister, a younger sister?
Everybody is older than me in my family. Okay, so I'm the last youngest. Just like Tom, I'm the youngest. Yes, I have a sister who's about a year older, mm-hmm. and she and I were in the house pretty much at the same time. My other sister, who's older, was a lot older, as was my brother. Mm-hmm. And so my brother was in the Navy when I was pretty young, and my other sister moved out when mm-hmm. I was fairly young, about seven or so. Mm-hmm. So
Did your sister or your sisters, did they cook more with your mom? Or was that, like, as you said, just like your mom did own thing and like that was it? Okay.
Yeah, she did her own thing. And my sister, Adele, she's mm-hmm. the one that's about a year older. She liked to bake cakes and she was a very good cake baker. Mm-hmm. And so she made cakes often for birthdays if mom didn't have time. And I was always really grateful because my mother, God bless her, made angel food cakes for our birthdays and we did not like them. I wanted chocolate, thank you very much, or something else other than angel food. Mm-hmm. Angel food cake is not a cake. I don't know what it is. And I know people will not agree with me, but it is like not what a kid wants typically. And then she'd do that kind of meringue frosting on it. It mm-hmm. was fun to watch her make them mm-hmm. and it smelled good in the house, but it was not what I wanted for my birthday. So okay. It was nice when my sister started making like German chocolate cakes mm-hmm. and things like that. So that was nice. It was a good switch. And my older sister would make us lunches and help with mm-hmm. dinners and stuff. But it wasn't, we weren't really allowed in the kitchen a whole mm-hmm. lot with food meals.
That makes me wonder, like, how did you pick up cooking? I mean, you said you like to watch. But I mean, there's watching and then there's doing. Usually there's a separate. How did you learn the skills to like cook your first soup?
I don't know. I think I just made it up. I think I literally thought, I'm going to make soup for dinner. Mm-hmm. And then I went in and I looked at what vegetables we had because I was more of a vegetable fan mm-hmm. than a meat fan. Always have been. And mm-hmm. And I just started making it and tasted it and went for flavoring. And even though that German hot dog thing was probably just some weird thing, although tons of Germans in mm-hmm. Minnesota, yep. I think it added a lot of flavor because it had spice. Yes. Mm-hmm. So that helped because I'm sure my base was just water, right? That's all there was.
Yeah, but I mean, it works.
No stock. Oh, absolutely yeah. No stock. And my mother wasn't a fan of onion or garlic, mm-hmm. which to me, that makes the dish, right?
Yeah.
So it was one of those things where it's like, okay, I'm sure there was no onion and garlic in this soup. So it was probably really simple, you know, carrots and celery mm-hmm. and that sort of a thing.
Yeah. But I mean, that sounds like you kind of created your own little stock. I mean, you probably didn't know what you're doing, but I mean, with like celery and onion, mm-hmm. carrots and so on, you kind of,
yep,
the base is there for like a good vegetable stock at least,
right? And if you eat canned soup ever in your life, you mm-hmm. know kind of what's in a soup, like mm-hmm. if you have a minestrone, you know what goes in a minestrone, so it's pretty easy to say, okay, I'm gonna put this and this mm-hmm. there, what do I have in my refrigerator? So it's one of those things of just trying it. My stepdad, I had a stepdad for a number of years, and he liked to make greens and ham hocks and stuff. So I was mm-hmm. around people who liked to cook. Mm-hmm. We had parties. We'd go to other people's houses that really liked to cook, and I would get in the kitchen and help with things there. Mm-hmm. I worked really well with adults, and so I was often invited. You know, I wasn't pushed mm-hmm. out of the kitchen everywhere, and my mom would let me help too, but mm-hmm. it was not that often because she didn't want to clean up the mess, I think. kids generate messes.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, as you said, if she's like single mom working multiple jobs, she doesn't have the time to mm-mm. teach you or to show you how to do it. So like it is in this case probably faster to just do it yourself.
Much so faster.
Kind of makes sense.
It might have been her therapy. Mm-hmm. Right? It's therapy for me. I'm having a bad day. I head to the kitchen. I mm-hmm. go, okay, I'm going to do some baking. And it's therapy.
Yeah, that is absolutely possible. Like, I mean, it's kind of the same for me. Like, I like to cook. I think that's the reason why I like to cook and then have other people over to eat it. Because I'm not about eating that much, but I'm like cooking. It's like fun.
Yes, I agree.
Did you, like, I think that was back in Minnesota, right? So did you like, did you cook with like, were there grandparents or anything around, and did you cook with them?
No, my grandparents were passed away. Mm-hmm. I had that neighbor Rose, but I didn't cook with her either. Mm-hmm. You know, I had that kind of childhood where you're like, go outside and play. Okay, great. We're going outside to play. Even mm-hmm. in the dead of winter, it was like, get outside, go do some sledding, go do something. And mm-hmm. so there wasn't a lot of time where, you know, it was children should be seen, not heard, you know, so we weren't invited into the adult world a whole mm-hmm. bunch. So yeah. And you asked that question about how did I learn to do these things? Well, I do remember when I moved to California my first year, and it was Thanksgiving mm-hmm. and I was trying to make a Thanksgiving dinner. I had no idea how to do anything. And I did call my mother and say, all right, mm-hmm. mom, tell me how I do this stuff. And so, you know, she told me over the phone, here's what you do with the turkey. And it, like, she held my hand with mm-hmm. that. Same with chicken. I had to mm-hmm. ask her, like, how do I cook chicken properly? Mm-hmm. And she would help me with that. So my mom was very food knowledgeable and treated food as something you eat, but also something you eat for a purpose, mm-hmm. you know, that it should be healthful. So I grew up with a lot of vegetables and that sort of thing. I ate a lot of salads. I went to restaurants when mm-hmm. I was younger. When I started working in high school, I started going to restaurants on mm-hmm. my own. And I think I learned a lot from eating out. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, a lot of people do that. It's still like, I mean, a big jump to from watching and like not, I mean, you don't know nothing, because I mean, as you said, like in your family, you've been around food, like it was a topic. It's not that it was never a topic and it was just like, I don't know, the TV dinner that was like reheated every day. Like, cooking was a thing. And also you said like for special occasions, probably like Thanksgiving, Christmas and whatever, you would like, there would probably be like a bigger family meal, right?
Yes.
So you yes. were around food. It just,
oh yes.
So, yes. So it said you didn't start at zero, but yeah, you had to learn like the basics, like as you said, chicken, like what do I do with it?
Yeah. Plus, it sort of grossed me out. It's mm-hmm. like, how do you touch this thing, right? That was the other part of it. It's like, oh, you know, what mm-hmm. do I do with this, you know? And you
yeah, vegetables you have to learn are
how
easier.
To clean it.
Yes, vegetables are much easier in that case. Like, I mean, it's yeah. hard. It's hard to, I mean, other than burning them or like, I mean, overcooking them, it's hard to go wrong there. Like, I mean, what's the worst that can happen? It doesn't taste very good. But
like, right. You overcook it.
Yeah, you overcook it.
That's the worst that can happen with a vegetable.
Undercooking is not too bad. Like, I mean, undercooked potatoes, well, just cook them a little bit longer.
right.
So, yeah, but with chicken and turkey and whatever, that's a different story. Like,
yes, hugely different. And mm-hmm. I'm sure the first turkey I ever made was Butterball. You know, I'm sure that it was something like that. And I think they had the built-in thermometer at that mm-hmm. point. And so, you know, but that's kind of a cheat, right? Mm-hmm. I could really appreciate that. It yeah. was a good feature that yeah. they added into those birds, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes I long for that again, mm-hmm. but but I do the, you know, free-range heritage turkey mm-hmm. stuff when I do turkey now. So, mm-hmm. yeah. yeah. So you got to have your own thermometer.
Exactly. Like once you know how to do it, you don't need it, even if it's convenient. Like you can do better. How? Like, so you moved to California. I mean, one, you probably had, that's something I just thought about. I'm guessing in Minnesota, especially in the winter, there wasn't too much available, like in vegetables or whatever, right? Variety is limited.
Right. It was very limited, and I know I've thought about that, and I thought, what did we eat in the winter? And I know that we ate a lot of squash.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. so there was a lot of hard squashes, and mm-hmm. we ate a lot of that. We ate frozen vegetables. Mm-hmm. That was something that was not that uncommon there. Mm-hmm. Also, people did can, mm-hmm. and my mom didn't really have time to can, but sometimes people would share. Mm-hmm. So, but frozen vegetables were the first option. Usually canned was the last. Mm-hmm. I loved canned spinach. So that was kind of my go-to. Like, I just loved eating canned spinach. So I was a weird kid. I do remember we ate things like that. Mm-hmm. But there also people had root cellars. Mm-hmm. So there was, you know, you'd have parsnips, carrots, rutabagas, potatoes, all the hard squashes. Mm. Yeah. There were rice, obviously, things that dried and you mm-hmm. put up that. Yeah, you know, that makes those sense. Things.
especially for an area where there are a lot of Germans, you will find like a lot of root vegetables.
We have that plus a lot of Scandinavians. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of variety as far as what do you do with winter foods mm-hmm. and how do you find them. So, and plus it wasn't that long ago. I'm not that old. We had grocery stores and they brought in different vegetables too. Mm-hmm. So there was some variety that way. And when I was probably in junior high, I think, the co-op system started there. Mm-hmm. So the food co-ops got started and that really was a game changer. We were able to get incredible food as mm-hmm. a result of that. And my family helped get them started and worked in them. And that's a big part of the culture in Minneapolis to this day is mm-hmm. the food co-ops. You go there, that's where I shop when I go back. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, they do a good job with getting in a lot of variety and mm-hmm. a lot of organic. So a lot more expensive there though than California.
Yeah, for sure. Since you mentioned food co-ops and your family went there, you mentioned earlier gardening, that it was something that you really enjoy doing. Is that does that trace back? No?
No, actually, I'm not a very good gardener. And my mom did usually have a garden if mm-hmm. we had space for it. Sometimes we lived in apartments. But she would put a garden in, and my sister was really into gardening with her. And mm-hmm. they'd say, what do you want to put in the garden? And I'd always say, flowers. And so I literally could care less about mm-hmm. what was in the garden. Mm-hmm. But we had one when mm-hmm. she could. And it was fabulous, right? Because there'd be fresh tomatoes and so on. Yeah. I am not a gardener. I've had a garden maybe a handful of times in mm-hmm. my life, but we just put in raised beds this year because we finally had time since we're in lockdown mm-hmm. to get some landscaping done. So we have some kale growing, some chard, some spinach, some different lettuces. I have an herb garden. I'm most excited about my herb garden mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. I can go to the farmer's market and buy everything.
Yeah.
But I like fresh herbs yeah. and everything. I'd put in a whole strawberry bed. I've been dragging these poor strawberry plants around for like 20 years in little pots. And I finally put them into a strawberry bed. And I'm like, I hope they don't shock and die.
But, they're like, they're not used to it anymore.
Yeah. So I'm not a green thumb. I'm mm-hmm. a flower thumb.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I thought that kind of tracked back, but I guess not. But I mean, you're right about the herbs. Like that is something. I haven't had a garden like in forever, like since I moved out, but I've always had herbs somewhere, mm-hmm. like at least like basil and like oregano, like some basic things that you always want to have there, like some mint, yeah. stuff like that. So I think that's a good starting point also for a lot of people, right? Where you can, like, even if you don't have the space, even if you're like living in an apartment, you can still grow like a small herb garden somewhere.
Exactly. On the windowsill,
yeah.
even if it's in the bathroom window, you know, you can do, not that you want it in the bathroom, but you know what I mean?
Well,
like, even if it's just a little window that just has a little light, you can do it. Well, and I buy most of them at the farmer's market, but mm-hmm. there's a pretty big waste with that. I try mm-hmm. to share, like I have a neighbor and I go, hey, you want some fresh herbs? I just got them. Mm-hmm. But there is a lot of waste because you get a big bunch. Mm-hmm. I just want to be able to go out and snip, you know, what I need.
Exactly.
And try some different things. We put in marjoram. I've been trying to use marjoram mm-hmm. a little bit more. And so we put in a marjoram plant, which I mm-hmm. think is good. But yeah, and they're easy to grow. Herbs are forgiving.
Yeah.
Not everything's
to some extent.
Forgiving.
To some extent.
We have to water them.
Yes. Yeah, that's the problem. That's the problem I run into. I forget to
Me
water
too.
Them.
Me too.
I have.
Yeah. We've got an irrigation.
Yeah. I literally killed a cactus at some point. So,
and,
you know, that's
hard. It's a little bit tricky to kill the cactus because you have to water them about once a month.
Yeah, I forgot that.
Put it on your calendar.
Oh, yeah. It's, I mean, it, a long time ago, but yeah.
Yeah.
I was still
a kid. Oh, yeah. If there's a plant around, I can help you kill it because I forget to water them too.
Yeah.
Bromeliads are a good plant. Mm. They're nice because you can put a whole bunch of water in the middle of them and then forget about them for a while.
Yeah. So. I always say, like, I like desert plants in general because, like, they can survive, like, months of, like no water at all, and then there's a monsoon.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That's like perfect.
Right. It's perfect. Yes, I have some cactus like that. And I forgot to water them for a really long time. Mm-hmm. And then I watered them and I went, wow, that thing just grew.
That's what I do. It's what I do. Yeah. Coming back a little bit. So you moved to California the first time. So you started like learning how to cook. How did you approach that? I mean, you said you called your mom. And got some recipes there. But I mean, mm-hmm. recipes is one thing, but you still need some basic skills. I mean, like knowing when is chicken done, stuff like that.
Yep. Yep. You have to, sometimes it's trial and error. Sometimes still with me, I won't mm-hmm. get the chicken quite where I want it. It'll be a little overcooked. Luckily, I have a husband who is kind of okay. He'd rather have it overcooked than undercooked, right? Which is important with chicken. Mm-hmm. So he's not a foodie, as you know. And so he doesn't go like, oh, this is the worst thing I've ever eaten in my life. He'll just be like, I'll say, it's a little dry, sorry. And he'll go, yeah, it's a little dry. And then he just eats it anyway. Like, thank you. You know,
just puts a little bit more sauce on it. Good.
Exactly. He's pretty forgiving. I put sauce and he just eats it. He does, literally does not care about food. Mm-hmm. I put it in front of him, he eats it, right? It's like he really doesn't care. Whereas I'm like night before going, hey, what should we have for dinner tomorrow night? Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
He's like, I don't care.
Yep.
So chicken is, it is, mm-hmm. you do, it's trial and error. And I would say I had housemates because mm-hmm. back, you know, when I moved to California, rents have never been cheap in California. Mm-hmm. It's always been a struggle to live alone. And so I had two and three housemates most mm-hmm. of the time, and they would have different levels of cooking ability. I had a woman who was, I want to say she was from the Middle East, and she had brought in her recipes mm-hmm. and I went down to her grandmother's with her in Southern California and had different mm-hmm. foods there. I literally love food. So I read cookbooks like their books. I don't watch the cooking shows as much during lockdown, which is sort of weird,
yeah.
but I used to watch them. And I love like the PBS, the public television ones that mm-hmm. we get. Like that would have been a Julia Child's channel and mm-hmm. Jacques Pepin and Lydia. And so I watched those, like their, you know, entertainment, you know, like other people would watch a sitcom or something. Mm-hmm. I prefer to watch a cooking show to a sitcom. And then cookbooks. I still like cookbooks. Mm-hmm. Pinterest has been a nice addition. I don't always trust the recipes, so I might get ideas from Pinterest and then look up like an authentic recipe site and use their version of it. Mm-hmm. But we live in a big food area too, so yeah. it's hard not to. The other thing, I'll be honest, I gained a huge amount of weight when I moved to California. It was my first time being out on my own. I was really young. You know how people go to college and they gain mm-hmm. weight? Well, I didn't go to college. I was a late bloomer on college, but I gained a ton of weight. And then I met a friend who's still a friend, and he said, you have to eat food as close to the way nature provides it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started doing that and I lost weight, and I pretty much have been able to maintain a good weight by not having much processed food. Mm-hmm. It was that I was eating a lot of processed, bad for you food. So thankfully I got some help with that.
Thankfully you got it early.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, because I was like 40 pounds heavier, which mm-hmm. is a lot. I'm not a very big person. So mm-hmm. that was a lot of weight for me. So mm-hmm. yeah, live and learn.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you do. That's probably... Well, I would guess there's no better place for that than California, to be honest. Like, there are a lot of people around. Like, it's always sunny in California, kind of. Well, it's not true, but it is very sunny.
Unfortunately, yeah, unfortunately, these days it is. We're sitting with the 70s right now, and it's nice. December, and we haven't had rain. Mm. So we're kind of sweating this a little bit, which will also, if we don't get the rain, the prices on food goes up. Mm-hmm. And that affects the entire country and world, because a lot of apricots and almonds and walnuts and stuff are exported. Mm-hmm. So I literally have
California almonds here right now.
Right. The price will keep going up if mm-hmm. we don't get our rain. So do your rain dances, because we need the rain.
We'll do. You mentioned cookbooks. I'm kind of wondering what's your favorite, or do you have like a favorite author or something like that?
So it depends on the time of life, you know, what I'm doing. When mm-hmm. I had my restaurant, one of my favorite was the Moosewood Cookbook. Mm-hmm. That taught me how to make soups that were incredible. So I highly recommend that book for nice, basic vegetarian food that has some flavor to it, though. Mm-hmm. It's a good starting book. I know it's a little dated, but it's a great starting book. And their soups are out of this world as far as, you know, tasty and healthful. Mm-hmm. I make them my own. Like I think I got the idea for a cream of broccoli soup from them, but I use brown rice as my cream. So I cook the brown mm-hmm. rice until it's really soft, puree that with the soup. And then I always put a little dash of nutmeg in on it, that people go, huh, this is really good, but they can't pin down that it's a nutmeg.
It's a nutmeg. Yep.
So so that's a book that I've used a lot in the past. Mm-hmm. They also have some amazing, just additional vegetarian restaurant foods that are really good mm-hmm. recipes. One of the ones that I thought of, because we talked about the bone broth and you said something about the vegetables, there's a cookbook called One Bite at a Time, I think. And it's a book for cancer patients. That book has an amazing vegetable broth. I think they call it like an emerald broth or something. And I highly recommend making that broth and using it. They have a number of soup recipes also that call for it. But I made it with kombucha squash soup mm-hmm. one time. I used that as the base. It was eye-poppingly good. Mm-hmm. It takes some effort, but it was super good and super worth the effort. Mm-hmm. So that one, for a totally vegetarian, flavorful broth, that's the one to use.
Sounds good. Killer. I have to look that up.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the Blue Zone Cookbook, that's a newer one. That one's a good one. But the recipes are, for me, maybe a little bit more time consuming than I mm-hmm. usually like to spend. I actually use cookbooks a lot of times. Like, I'll try the recipe the way they say to do it the first time, and mm-hmm. then it's mine after that. Mm-hmm. I adjust it. Like, I think your guy, Chris, the barbecue guy that you had
Chris,
on, is his name Chris? He talked about, you know, not wanting to share his recipes. And I actually was laughing because I'm sort of the same way. Like mm-hmm. I have a banana bread recipe that I've perfected over the years. But the funny thing is, I've given that recipe to people, honestly, the entire recipe written down, mm-hmm. no changes. And they always say, it doesn't taste like yours. It's not as good as yours. And so I'm like, yes, it's my recipe, right? So I'll share it, and I'll mm-hmm. share it in full with just a few people. But it's a jumping off point, the cookbook.
Yeah. So that right? was, that actually leads into a question that I wanted to ask, like about how your cooking style. So it sounds like you take a recipe as an inspiration. You might cook it the first time, like how it is written, and then it's kind of like you make it your own, right?
Yes. I might add another ingredient or mm-hmm. two that they didn't have. Like, again, back to that cancer cookbook. Mm-hmm. I've done cooking for people with cancer, and one of my clients said that would be a good book. So I got mm-hmm. it. They have a chicken pot pie recipe in there. It's really good. I mean, chicken pot pie is just a nice, warm, comfort food. I've changed it. You know, I've added mm-hmm. some things to the inside. And it depends on what's fresh. I'm not a big fan of, like, frozen peas. So I might add some broccoli mm-hmm. stem pieces. And yep. not the top, yep. but the stems instead, because mm-hmm. they have a similar kind of a texture. I'll try it the first time, especially baking. I think you kind of have to follow the recipe initially to kind of get an idea of what it's supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And then you can make some changes to it.
Yeah, that's something I had to learn because I'm not a rule or recipe follower. mm-hmm. Yeah, with baking, that doesn't work out that great. Usually, I mean, it's okay, but it's never great. So yeah, you should follow the recipe a little bit more. Can always change it afterwards.
Yes. Yeah. And I have taken a few classes. Like every once in a while, there'll be something. I remember years ago, there was some chef that offered like a soup making class, and I took that class. So how to make stocks and stuff. There was a really good kitchen store here that had classes, and I took like a souffle making class, and I took a tamale making class. Yeah, but I haven't made them. You know, I think I should make a souffle, and then I think, no, I can go to Cafe Jacqueline and have a souffle.
Well, that's true. I mean, the fact that you can make it doesn't mean that you want to.
Right. Yeah. So maybe someday I'll do another chocolate souffle or something.
You never know. Like, one day you might invite people over and totally feel like a chocolate souffle, and you're like,
there you go.
See, I can do it.
Look what I can do. Yeah, it's a fussy food, but it was fun to take the classes, and I learn in each class. So it's fun to do that.
That's the most important thing. Coming back, you mentioned something about a restaurant.
Yes.
So I'm curious now.
So I had a restaurant for just over a year, and I sold it. And it was called Zoom Cafe, and it was actually in Indiana. That was the other place. I went to Indiana for a while too. And I would be running around in Indiana and just be starving. And there was literally no place I could eat. I'm not a fast food eater. I would not go to, you know, Burger King or any of those places. I won't. And so, cause it just doesn't sit well with me. And so I thought, you know, I can't be the only person that has this problem. And so this was, it's New Albany, Indiana, which is right across the bridge from Kentucky, Louisville, Kentucky. And so just, you know, I do things like this sometimes. My partner and I actually talked about opening a pub. That was what we started with. And then I went away on a weekend with some gal pals, and they got so drunk, and it was so awful to be around them that I thought, okay, I can't own a bar. There's no way I can do anything with alcohol because I can't be around drunks. It doesn't work. I'd be handing out, here's your local AA meeting cards, right? So so then we decided on a coffee house. And so the coffee house was literally in a little house, and we put in, had a restaurant as well. So it was pastries in the morning, which I made all of them, not pastries like French pastries. This was muffins and scones and coffee cake and that kind of thing, simple things. So I made those and had those fresh and hot every morning. And then we did lunch as well. And on the weekends, I made breakfast. And breakfast, it was a really tiny kitchen. Think of like a little apartment-sized kitchen. And so this was a house, itty-bitty kitchen, and open. It was completely open, didn't have any, so I put curtains up and so that I could close them sometimes. Like sometimes I was kind of cranky, you know, like I didn't want people to see me when I was cranky,
like,
you know.
Yes, you do sometimes. Like, it's just normal.
Yeah, it's like, okay, I'm under so much pressure. I've got to close these curtains for a little while because I'm just flying and I don't want people talking to me. That would be the other part of it. I'd pull my mom, right? I'd be like, I'm pulling a Marge. I'm closing the curtains. and other times I'd have it wide open and I would be going, here, try this. And I'd be giving people spoonfuls of food. So, but the limited breakfast was scrambled tofu. I did eggs, a scrambled egg or some sort of egg dish. I had banana muffins. I never made toast. I was like, nope, nope, not doing toast. Nope, this isn't where you come in and tell me you want your eggs over hard or over easy. I'm not doing it. It ain't happening. Here's what we offer. I made really good whole wheat pancakes and cinnamon whole wheat pancakes with real maple syrup. Never that fake stuff. And so, yeah, and it was mostly vegetarian with, I did have chicken on the menu, and I had tuna fish on the menu, and there was a roasted turkey. I did roasted turkey and made sandwiches with cranberry with that. And so those were sort of staples.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah. And then coffee. We had the coffee bar, which was phenomenal. A friend of mine ran it, and we brought our coffee in from California, from Grafeo, and also from Santa Cruz Roasting Company, two really good companies. I don't know if Grafeo is still around. They were literally in North Beach, which is the Italian district in San Francisco. And so, yeah, and we did that. And I made all my own whipping cream fresh. There was no jarred stuff. It was, everything was fresh. And it was, oh my God, so popular that we couldn't believe it. We were like, we started out with like a little bowl of whipping cream, like maybe a cup's worth of whipping cream, thinking, oh, this will be enough. We were caught by surprise so many times initially that I'd be cooking and doing whipping cream. One hand would be doing one thing and the other hand would be doing the other thing. Yep. And we'd be running around like chickens with our heads cut off. And then I'd be like, oh my God, we're going to have to make more. Mm-hmm. So it was super fun, super hard work and stressful, but super fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and we had rotating artwork in the restaurant. Right. So it was a great thing.
Yeah. I mean, that is very different than cooking at home. So like,
yes,
very, I mean, as someone who has so many friends in the restaurant business, I decided not to do it for good reason. I never regretted that. That is a pretty, that's a steep learning curve that you kind of had to go through, right? I mean, running a business like that. And I mean, it's not just the restaurant and or the cafe part, it's also the business and everything. So that is, wow.
Yes, it was a one of those things, like afterwards I went, what was I thinking? And when I moved back to California, it was like, well, you should open a restaurant here. And I'm thinking, no, I should not open a restaurant here. Part of why it worked in Indiana was there was nothing like it. We were the only place that had, you know, this fresh food concept that wasn't sort of higher end restaurant. And we were the only place that had a coffee bar. There was no Starbucks. They didn't exist there yet. They came in later, and I'm happy to say didn't kill us off like they try to do, but they, there was none of that. It was, just the perfect opportunity, and it was blind stupidity of just like, let's do this.
I mean, sometimes those are the best ideas, like the things where like you just stumble into them. How did you end up in Indiana? Like, I mean, you were California before?
Romance.
Oh yeah, okay, of course.
First it was Kansas, and then we moved to to Indiana. It was romance. Those are romance capitals. Hardly. Oh.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a decision in life where you go, oh yeah, this is gonna be great, and then it's not. So I moved back to California.
But I mean, you still did it, and you got that experience.
It was fabulous.
Yeah, I can imagine. Like, how did you learn those restaurant skills? Because I mean, as you said, that's completely different.
I have no idea. I was a waitress when I was in high school. I was a terrible waitress, but I was one for probably about a year. It's actually how I funded my move to California, partly. I didn't make enough tips to do that very well, though, because I was a terrible waitress. I forget things. And I did a waitressing job at a retirement home for a while, but I never worked in a kitchen. So I have no idea. It really literally was like, I can do this. And, you know, and okay, let's do it kind of a thing. And then I dragged friends into the process. And then I met farmers and got my produce locally, which was great. And I joined a food co-op also there. And that co-op was delivered by a big, huge truck once a month. Nice. And so, and it was delivered to our restaurant, and then people would come pick up their order from us. I don't know. How did I learn about Cisco? I have no idea how I did these things. You just do. You just kind of, and this was pre-computer, like internet searching stuff. There weren't devices.
No.
We didn't have cell phones. Right? That didn't, I mean, not that they didn't exist, but we didn't have them. It wasn't part of the lifestyle. But you jump in, you say, here's my menu. Here's what I want to do. Here's what it's going to cost, you know, to make it. Here's what we'll add on to for a little bit of profit. And you just jump in and go. And it was great. And the community support was unreal, and we had the best customers in the world. We just, it was just luck. You know, it was pure dumb luck. because we didn't know what we were doing. But you know, we've seen restaurants.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you worked at a restaurant, so it's not like you weren't completely blind. Like, not entirely, at least.
No, but I wasn't paying attention. Mm-hmm. I was young. You know, yeah, I was still, a young waitress. Yeah. You stoke some of it up.
Yeah, you still pick like little things up, like
yes.
menus and like the little things. At least you still, even if you don't pay attention, they come back.
Sure, yeah. You know, we made milkshakes at the restaurant I worked at, so I did the coffee drinks. You know, we as the wait staff had to make those things, so I was around some of that. Mm-hmm. But as far as like, you know, making sandwiches and stuff for people, I never did that. But I kept the menu simple. That was the other thing. It was really simple. And then I did a hot special every day. And one of my hot specials came from, oh my gosh, I have all these broken chips, because I did corn chips on the side with salsa. And so I started making taco salads, and I used all the broken chips, and I'd make huge pots of beans. And that was, you know, it's kind of food that I liked, and then I just made it bigger. There was more chicken salad. No idea how I, you know, came up with that. I used to make this basil chicken salad that was so good, and it was just inspiration. What's in season? What do I have? Okay, let's do that. So, just blind luck and hard work.
Yeah, hard work.
I was up at 5 every morning. Up at 5 every morning. Often just, you know, I would lay down on the floor. There was a corner of the floor that in the restaurant, my restaurant was spotless, by the way, and I would curl up and take a little nap there. And then I'd get up and I'd go, okay, now start, you know, finish doing this. And I do that because I would just be exhausted by about 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I would say that's normal.
Yes. Yeah. So it's pacing.
Like that. You said you sold that after a year.
Little over a year. Yep. Sold it to a lady and she had 2 daughters. They killed it in 6 months.
Wow.
And then, yeah, it's too bad. But then this man that I knew, his mom, well, she was an artist that had an art show in our restaurant. He was a full-on chef. Like I was a cook. He was a chef. And he started his restaurant there. And the ironic part was it was called Pegasus. And so it went from pretty much vegetarian to full on meat. It was all meat. He put grills out back. I mean, it was really funny. It was hysterical. I mean, when our friends that live there told us, I was just like, well, that's ironic. But he was a really good chef. So he had a long time.
Why did you sell? Like, was that simply too much work, or like, did you just want to move back to California? Okay.
Yeah, it was the end of the romance, and went back to California.
The romance with California like was just stronger.
Stronger. Indiana's lovely, but I don't like winter. So, and also there's a lot of racism. It's tough there. It was a tough place for me. I actually had to ask people to leave occasionally because of racist comments that I wouldn't tolerate. So, but then that was just a little bit of it. The winters killed me. Just they get ice storms. I don't know how people deal with ice storms.
I don't know.
Go to sleep. Yeah, you go to sleep, and the next morning you wake up, and the roads are just thick with this ice, and you have to drive on them. Forget it. It's not happening. It's a beautiful part of the world, though.
Yeah.
I mean, if anybody ever has a chance, they should see like Kentucky, and that area is just beautiful, green, like nobody's business. So much green.
Yeah, I couldn't do that either. Like 11 months of the year in a freezer. No, not for me.
No. Yeah, it's just not great.
Yeah, I don't know. So. I don't know who said that. Someone once said it's like 11 months of summer, of winter, and 1 month it's cold.
Right. Well, that had to be a Minnesotan.
Yeah,
probably. Or somebody from Alaska.
Yeah, something like that.
Because it was like that in Minnesota, too. I left right out of high school. I was like, you guys can stay here. I can't do it. I don't have that blood. I'm out of here.
I believe that. So you moved back to California. No restaurant.
No restaurant, thought about it, but the rents were too high to make a go of it. You really have to sell booze to do well here, I think, some or something. There's because the rents are just ridiculous. But I did personal chefing. Mm-hmm. So I went into doing private chefing for people. And I call it cooking, though, because I'm not a chef. And that was super fun. That was super fun. Sometimes the diet restrictions get a little bit old, you know, but other than that, it was really fun to do.
How did that happen? Was it just based on what you'd done in Indiana? You moved back and you're like, I want to continue that. And you just found your niche, or was there like,
it was like, oh, I can do this. And I should add that, I was what's called a baby nurse in the industry. But I was not a nurse, but I did night work also. Mm-hmm. So I had relationship with an agency in California who, I let them know I'd like to do some cooking. Mm-hmm. And so they helped set me up with families and people that needed cooking. Then there's word of mouth, you know, like people go, oh, you can cook. Could you do this? Like the cancer patients, it was, could you do a macrobiotic, cooking for me? And I was like, yeah, sure, I can do macrobiotic. I know how. I cooked with the macrobiotic chef. Oh, I forgot about that. I actually did work in a deli for a while. So I had cooked with a macrobiotic chef and learned a lot from her. Mm-hmm. And the other cancer patient was, she knew me from that baby nurse world. And when she got cancer, she said, can you cook? I know how you cook. And so I said, sure, tell me what you want. And that's kind of how it happened. So I would deliver food to those women. Some people I cooked in their kitchens, which was great because they had beautiful kitchens. Mm-hmm. So that was really nice, but I did that for a while. And it was fun. I really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. So, but children and babies are my passion. That's tends to be where I end up.
Okay. So that kind of took over, like you were cooking and then kind of the children, the baby side took over and you'd simply like,
again, yes, because I had been a nanny prior to moving to, exciting Kansas and Indiana. I'd been a nanny and a baby nurse. And so basically it just was sort of like, okay, that was fun. Let's get back to the real love, which is the little ones. Also, I studied psychology and child development and holistic health during my return back to California. And so psychology, helping families be as psychologically sound as possible, is a passion for me.
That makes sense. I mean, not that it wouldn't make sense if it just happened, but if you're studying for something, you kind of want to do something with that. Well, not everybody does, but most people do at least. There are those people that just study something and then never use it.
Right. Yeah. I do miss food, though. I've been thinking about, maybe I could start baking or working in a restaurant a couple days a week or something. I miss it. I miss feeding people. It's very satisfying. I bake, but, a lot of people don't want food that you bake at home right now because they're afraid of the COVID thing. But most neighbors, I drop it at their door and go, here, I baked today. So they're appreciative of it.
So let's say prior to COVID, did you like invite people over a lot and like cook for them or bake for them? Is that a thing?
Not a lot, but we did some. Tom has a really big family. Mm-hmm. And so it would usually be the family that we would have over. And then we always had a Christmas party. And at that, it was just like, there was lots of food. I almost always made paella and then some salads and other these lavash roll-up sandwich things, depending on what inspired me, something with prawns or whatever. But yes, we'd have that once a year. And that was like my big woohoo, I get to feed people and lots of food. A signature drink, which turned into being a hot apple pie, ended up being the signature drink because people loved it so much. So okay. Do you know what that is?
No.
I can't remember. It's apple cider and tawaka, and there's another alcohol in it that I can't remember. And then I would do homemade whipping cream and then just put a sprinkle of that nutmeg on top. They're so good. And you have to whip the whipping cream until it's really solid, not butter, but really solid, because you want it to melt slowly into this drink so that as you're sipping it, you're getting just the right amount of cream mixed in.
I have to try that.
So
I have to look that
so
up.
So good. So good. And I always put fresh orange slices mm-hmm. in mine, slice up a few and have them float in there and give it that extra flavor and cinnamon. Mm-hmm. So you make it like hot apple cider, right? Mm-hmm. Like you would have the spice cider and then add in the booze. And so I'd have a huge pot going on the stove. Whole house smells like heaven. Mm-hmm. And the kids could have the no alcohol version. And then the adults, it would be like, yep, here's a splash of this and a splash of that, and then send them on their way. Yeah, and it worked really well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's also very smart like thinking, because you can have it for the kids and then just spice it up for the, exactly. for the adults. So.
Exactly.
And who doesn't yep. like apple pie? Like, I don't think those people exist.
Well, who doesn't like whipping cream?
Well, thank you very much. People do exist.
I know, but please, most people like whipping cream. Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway, it's good. Mm-hmm. So, it's a good party trick.
Oh, yeah. I can imagine yeah. that. So, yeah, I think, I mean, we've kind of reached almost the end. There's one thing I want to ask about, and that is now the COVID times. Is there anything, I mean, you mentioned a little bit that like you're kind of itching to cook for other people, mm-hmm. but has that changed anything in your life, cooking-wise or food-wise?
Yeah, we're not really having family over very much. We've had a couple times where, you know, we'll do like a socially distance thing out in the yard, and we have a pretty good system for that. But it is winter, and yes, it's warm for a couple hours during the day, but it does put a little kibosh on that. I grocery shop for a couple people now. That's kind of my thing. So I still get to be in the food world a little bit. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while, they'll throw me a challenge like, oh, can you find this? And it's like, I don't know. Let me see, you know? Okay. So I'm kind of getting a little bit of the foodie thing that mm-hmm. way. I'm just gearing up to do my Christmas baking. Mm-hmm. That will be, you know, I'll be doing persimmons are mm-hmm. in season right now. And it's the conical type. So they're the really gooey type. Mm-hmm. And so, and the fuyu are also in season. Those are the crunchy ones. And I throw those in salads at the holidays. But so I'm going to make persimmon bread this year, persimmon pecan bread, and see how that turns out. Cause this will be a new one. I usually make persimmon muffins and date nut bread and that kind of thing. So and then just gift it to people. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's changed. There's no entertainment. We won't have the Christmas party. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not happening. And so that's kind of disappointing. We usually go camping every year too, a whole group of us. It was called the Virgo Birthday Bash. Mm-hmm. And everybody brought food to that. And our first night was always potluck, which was pretty cool because there'd be a lot of mm-hmm. really good food there. And so we didn't do that this year because mm-hmm. it was lockdown. So. Things have changed, but you know, I still get to go to the farmer's market and mm-hmm. I still get to be creative mm-hmm. in the kitchen with the food. So I'm trying to look at, and I have more time. I'm not as busy as I was. So, I am trying to look at what the plus part of the COVID mm-hmm. is. And that's definitely one of them.
Yeah.
You know, more time can cook more.
Mm-hmm. No, that is a very, very good way of looking at it. I do miss potlucks. I mean, that's something I honestly didn't know before I moved to Phoenix. Not the way America does it, at least. I mean, mm-hmm. like there were similar-ish things, but not like the same. And I kind of miss that. And I think mm-hmm. a lot of people do, like from what I've heard, like a lot of people miss those potlucks and just getting together and like all of that.
Absolutely.
We'll get there.
Yeah. Like this year it was a turkey breast. I didn't do a whole turkey. It was mm-hmm. just three of us, right? You just have to adapt. And yes, this too shall pass. It's mm-hmm. it's a blip. And when you think about what some people are enduring or used to endure, I mean, think about people who went through the Depression, yep. please. This is nothing. Nope. As long as you have a roof over your head and food on your table, it's fine. It's the people that don't have that we mm-hmm. have to reach out and help and have compassion and understanding for.
Yeah. And there are a lot of them right now, like especially.
There are. Yep. there really are, and we see it acutely here in California for sure. Yeah, because of the weather, partly, you know, you can live on the street easier here than you can other places. Mm. So it's in our faces, and we are lucky to not be amongst that in the way of living on the street. So I try to be grateful every single day for what I have.
Yeah, me too. That's a perfect ending for the show, I would say.
Oh, thank you.
We wrapped it up with a nice little bow. Thank you so much for doing this. It was a great pleasure. Learned a lot. Things I didn't know, things I didn't expect. So I think people will be very happy. You definitely have to come back. I have a big list of questions still.
Okay, anytime.
So you will have to come back at some point. Like there's just too much, like all this moving around. We haven't even talked about Connecticut and like really anything.
Oh, Connecticut's lovely. Maine's better. Connecticut's amazing. So I'll look forward to it. Thank you so much having me.
Are you on social media or anything?
Well, I have a website for my business.
That is
great. People can reach out and do the contact form there if they want to reach me. So it's Teresa, T-E-R-E-S-A, the number 4, and then changes, C-H-A-N-G-E-S. .com. So it's teresa@teresaforchanges.com. And I'm happy to hear from people. If you need me to give you more specifics on cookbooks that I named, I'm happy to do it. But it sounded like you knew them.
I probably will reach out to you to get some of the links. Have noted down some of them. Yeah, but I'll definitely put the website and the email address in the show notes if anybody needs help in, like, the area was baby childhood development, right? Something like that.
Sleep and behavior. Mm-hmm. Sleep and behavior with from 0 to about 6 years.
Yeah.
That's specialty.
Important age, especially for sleep and especially for behavior.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, if anybody needs help with that, you can reach out to Teresa and she will be able to help you. Thank you so much for doing this. If anybody wants to also be a guest on the show, like Teresa did, she reached out, then please reach out to me at foodieflashback.com. There's a little contact form. You can also just reach out if you're on social media, on Twitter, on Facebook, like at foodieflashback, or just search for me, thepatrice.com, and we will set something up. It's very easy. And with that, thank you so much for listening. Thanks again, Teresa, for being here. Talk to you next time. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.